Welcome to the Hustle Versus Flow podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Thomas. And after 15 years hustling in the corporate world, I finally shifted my do more mentality into a have more identity using mindset and manifestation. Join me and my guests as we share the experiences that helped us create empowering careers, discover the potential within, and expand into our best selves in business and beyond. Are you ready to level up? Of course you are, because together we're going to conquer those fears, work through your limiting beliefs, and use mindset techniques to help you realize your worth. Hustle less, flow more, and manifest your best. This is the Hustle Versus Flow podcast. I'm back for a very special episode featuring author, social entrepreneur, speaker, and self-love advocate, Jenna Banks. Today we're talking about her new book, I Love Me More. Jenna pivoted from the self-loathing survivor of a traumatic childhood and nearly fatal suicide attempt to a fully empowered woman who knows her worth. Following her passion for entrepreneurship and achieving business success with just a GED, $400, and a laptop, Jenna's now focused on her mission to fulfill what she sees as her ultimate life's purpose, helping women embrace their value and power through self-love. Today, Jenna and I are discussing her amazing, new, and best-selling book titled, I Love Me More, How to Find Happiness and Success Through Self-Love. Let's jump into it. My guest, Jenna Banks. Hello.
Well, hello.
Hi.
And welcome,
so nice to be here,
Jenna.
Oh,
I am so excited to have you on a very special podcast episode today.
She was so generous to share with me her brand new and best-selling book, I might add, I Love Me More. Oh my goodness. I have to say right off, the title itself is a little taboo, right? We're not supposed to say, I love me more. And I just, once you dive into this book, it's obviously self-explanatory what that means, but can you tell the listeners just a little bit about like your motivation to, you know, really get down and write this book?
I'm glad that you brought up the title being a little taboo. Absolutely. It sounds selfish, doesn't it? I love me, not just I love me more. So, you know, what I found is that self-love, so you could love yourself and still put everybody else first.
Yeah.
You could love yourself and still be everyone's errand runner. You could love yourself and still not go for the dream job. You could love yourself and still not know how to be honest about your needs and desires with others. So it's not enough just to love yourself. You have to love yourself more than your kids, more than your partner, more than your family, more than your friends, more than your boss. And it is not selfish. As a matter of fact, you know, there is a myth out there that it's either selfish or narcissistic. There's a lot of psychologists, psychotherapists that have this hurdle to overcome with their clients, the female clients in particular, because it's this fear of selfishness syndrome that really keeps us from loving ourselves and putting ourselves first. We just think, oh, no, I'm supposed to be sacrificing myself for everybody else. But actually, it's by loving yourself more that you have more love to give to everybody else. It's the opposite of what we've been raised to think, really.
And it's funny because there are so many like alarm bells as you're talking, like love yourself more than your kids. And I know that what all of our female listeners are thinking, like, well, okay, but not more than my kids. And it's just, it's such an odd thing to say, but I have to say that it's been ingrained in females, especially passed down from generation to generation that no, you are to sacrifice yourself for children, for a husband. If you are a stay-at-home parent, it's just something that it's just, you don't get to put yourself first. And I think it's, I love the way in which you've kind of delivered these lessons in a really digestible way. I think we all know the fill your cup before you can't serve from an empty cup and fill your cup and all these things. And I think you even made a reference to, flight attendant saying, put your air mask on before your child. And it's we all know what we're supposed to do, but it's those like small little tactics. And I love how you, again, you really deliver those things in not just personal lives, not just like, hey, learn to love yourself first and then serve your kids and write an entire book about it. It is really, hey, we're talking about your personal life. We're talking about relationships. We're talking about friendships, which that chapter was so eye-opening for me personally, because I'm such a girl's girl. I love, you know, making female connections, because it's easy to get wrapped up in those. And I think that, you know, you talk a lot about healthy boundaries and things to that nature. And then you even get into, you know, how to practice self-love in your career, even in a corporate workplace, which I thought, you know, I'm obviously 15 years ex corporate girl. And I thought, okay, like I'm intrigued now. I've never really, at least I've not read a lot of articles or books where it shows how to, you know, insert self-love and self-respect and even boundaries, God forbid, at work.
At work, super important.
I don't know. And I really want you to talk a little bit about something that I think a lot of women struggle with or are kind of stumble with a little bit. And that's relying on external validation when making, you know, big decisions, career changes, making a choice to like go after an entrepreneurial like adventure. I think that we are so quick to ask others their opinions just for some kind of, yeah, you should totally do that. Or that's a great idea. Can you talk a little bit about what you touch on in the book and kind of your vantage point on this external validation?
Yeah, nobody knows what's right for you, but you really, no one knows what sits within your soul, what resonates with you, what brings you joy, what brings you happiness. It's going to be unique for every individual. Now, don't get me wrong. We're raised to be this way. We're raised to look for the external validation. Yep. You know, even, and this gets talked about a lot. This applies to both men and women. I hear this a lot lately. Like, what's our definition of success? Is it the big house, the marriage with the three kids, two boys and a girl, whatever, you know, what does that look like? And where did that definition of success come from? It came from the outside world. Did you come up with that? Is that based on what was resonating in your soul? Or was that something that mom was always like, you need to bring me some grandkids? Did dad say, you know what? I want you to be a doctor just like me. And you just were programmed with this at a very early age. You know, I've come to learn through my research that we form 95% most of our beliefs by the time we are age seven. Seven. This means that what we think a woman should be, what a man should be, you know, what's good, what's bad, what's right, what's wrong, is formed by the time we're age seven. We didn't get to form those beliefs on our own. Those were programmed into our mind. And then what happens is they go into the subconscious, unconscious. And then we just act on these beliefs as if they are facts, when in reality, it might not be true for us. And so it's stripping away those layers and getting to really what's true for us and what resonates for us and what we consider success. Maybe success for you is just waking up being happy every day, you know, being full of joy.
And I love how you kind of segued into that, how 95% of those beliefs are really formed by the time you're seven. I have a 9-year-old, a 6-year-old, and an almost 4-year-old. And it's a little bit horrifying to think like, okay, what have I been teaching my kid? Or, you
exactly.
know, what example have I been setting? And it actually goes right into my next, you know, kind of question I wanted to ask you about. There was this, it was chapter 13. I wrote it down, the avoid the trap of overgiving. And I was like, ugh.
We've all been there.
Every word I read, I was just like, oh boy. I think I even like groaned a little bit. My husband's laying next to me, but he was like, everything okay? And I was like, nothing, just a little bit of truth bombs coming from Miss Jenna over here. And I think that it's so important to realize the vantage point of like this particular woman. And when you buy the book, when you read the book, you will know what I'm talking about. Jenna, you paint a very vivid picture of a mother who is overextending herself. And essentially what that person is left with, perhaps after her children have grown up, once she is kind of maybe faced with this new identity of herself after giving so much of herself and not just, you know, getting the kids ready, but like volunteering and saying yes to everything and not upholding some of those boundaries. And I have been cognizant of it enough. You know, I've learned about kind of some of these aspects enough that I try to stay pretty like, okay, what message am I giving my kids? But I will sneak this one thing in because I do think it's so important for this next generation, especially of women going into the workforce. What types of lessons, what would you hope that they could gain from this book of, you know, I know that you may have been taught, you know, that this is your lot in life, that this is your role, that you need to get married, that you need to make a good house, you need to make a great, gorgeous wife for your husband. Like, I have, you know, teenage nieces, and sometimes I'm like, you are growing up in a completely different world than I
am. Totally different world. Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, what kind of advice do you give to those young people, especially females who are about to go into workforce with boomers, with millennials, people who are not quite, you know, new age, if you want to call it that, or aren't really used to these terminologies and this research? What do you tell them? Okay, before we jump into what Jenna has to say, it's pretty obvious that I'm invested in empowering women and especially that next generation of women and their dedication to both self-love and self-discovery. While I mentioned the term new age, I want to let you know that this action of self-discovery doesn't have to be intense or a lengthy process. In fact, it's actually one of the reasons why I wrote my book, The Mind Hustle. It's an intentional journal practice to help you achieve big results without that big time commitment. In only 5 minutes a day, you'll transform all areas of your life as I guide you through powerful manifestation and mindset techniques that will truly help you manifest your best. Check out all the Mind Hustle products linked in the show notes below. Now, back to Jenna.
The young ones, what age range are you thinking? Like 20, like 23?
I think, maybe? Yeah, like 16 to like 23, yeah. Looking for their, getting their foot in the door. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, what kind of self-love are they practicing at this stage? So I know a lot of it is navigating relationships, but you know, they're going to have a hard time in those first jobs of, you know, being entry level. I don't know. That's,
You know, here's the thing. Again, we learn from those who've modeled what being a female is or being a male is, right? Mm-hmm. So if our mothers model to us self-sacrifice as a virtue, I mean, I have to say, even myself, I'm going to put this out there. When I was raised in a home where spanking was the norm. Yep. And I looked at it as child abuse personally, but I hated it. I swore I'd never be that person. But once I became a mom and your kid starts acting out, your instant go-to is, oh, I'm going to swat him on the butt.
Because and you don't even know where it comes from. Yep.
Exactly.
Why would I even have that thought? Yeah.
It's a knee-jerk reaction because it's all you know. Mm-hmm. And so even the young ones today going into the workforce, I bet you their mother's model to them self-sacrifice is a virtue. So while they might feel like they love themselves, the default method when they go to be a parent is probably going to be this whole self-sacrifice is a virtue thing, because that's what we've been modeled. And it feels selfish, like we talked about in the beginning, to break that pattern. So what I talk about a lot is that self-love can often be uncomfortable and also painful in the beginning, especially. And that beginning might be years. It could take years to get to the point where you're beyond the discomfort. Because, and what I mean by that is, for example, guilt.
Yeah.
Thinking about putting ourselves first right away, you're going to feel guilty.
Yeah.
And it could be the mom guilt. We all know what that feels like. But the thing about guilt that I want you to know, and this is really important, is that guilt is not necessarily an indication that you're doing something wrong. For the most part, guilt is an indication that you are going against a programmed behavior. There's studies behind this, research behind this, psychologists will tell you this. It's an indication that you're going against a pattern. So when you go to break this pattern, you're going to feel guilt and it's going to feel uncomfortable. It's going to feel wrong. Oh my God, I'm doing something bad, right? And that doesn't feel good. Also, I talk about my breakups in the book where I had to choose myself and go through the heartache of the pain of the breakup, but I needed to put myself first and prioritize myself and my needs because the relationship wasn't serving me. And I had to go through that pain to come through the other side in my power and on the right track for me. And that was painful, hard to deal with. And, you know, your mind starts playing tricks on you saying, it's like being on heroin, which I've never been, but I'm not judging anyone who has. But
that addiction. You talk about that. Yeah, that dopamine type of addiction. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we get addicted to love. And that it's the same thing that happens with a drug addict, the dopamine release when you're doing the drugs, the same thing with love and sex. And so we need to be aware, and this is why there are so many reasons for writing the book, but I wanted to shed a light on these things that we don't know. We're not raised knowing. No one's told us this stuff, but you can get addicted to love just like you can get addicted to drugs. It's the same chemical release that happens to the brain. It's an addiction oftentimes, and it doesn't mean it's healthy for you. So yes, it can be painful going through the withdrawal of getting off that dopamine release to choose yourself. So like I like to say, oftentimes self-love can be uncomfortable and painful, but you have to be willing to go through that to choose yourself, put yourself first, and become this model for the next generation and for everybody around us of what it looks like to love ourselves. No one, I'm telling you, I've gone through this journey myself. I'm still going through it. It's a constant journey, but no one's accusing me of being selfish. I can promise you that.
Yeah.
And no one's like, oh my God, look at her. She is conceited and narcissistic. No, it's not that at all. And so it's really important to just understand that self-love is a little deeper, in fact, a lot deeper than what a lot of us think it is. A lot of people think it's getting your hair done, getting your nails done, going to the spa. All that's great. I highly recommend it. You need self-care, but that is self-care. Self-love, on the other hand, is some of this deeper, more difficult stuff.
And I love how you kind of led into that because I've never heard that statistics, of course, not statistic, but that research, and you do cover it in your book, this feeling of guilt and where that comes from. And basically it's just going through something that's, you know, programmed into your brain. And it's, and again, how you've related it to so many different areas of one's personal life. I know how you mentioned like in your relationships. And I think that, As a female, you go through life, you're not going to have the same friendships, the same relationship all of your life. And you go through these phases of learning about yourself and learning what, I think you had mentioned that you'd gone to a relationship coach that I thought was so cool. I was like, I've never even, you know, you hear of counseling and couples counseling, but going to a coach like, hey, can you help me identify what I like and what I will not stand for? Because I think that so often, you know, if you're asked like, well, what do you like? What would you like in a husband or whatever? We're like, well, you know, it'd be nice if he was kind and everything. It's just, it's so much more relationships. Friendships are so more multifaceted that once you can easily identify what you value in a person, a person that you choose to surround yourself, again, whether that be a, you know, a partner, a roommate, a friend, like it's so important. And I learned that lesson again and again, as I've moved, you know, to different cities, gone to colleges out of states where I know no one, going into social situations where, you know, you really have to, like, if you want to have a friend, you kind of have to put yourself out there. But I think what you mentioned in the book was this idea of energy vampires and how you really have to look out for those people who are lighting you up. You've mentioned relationships in your book where you were like a shell of yourself. I don't feel myself. I don't feel my exuberant self, you know, or you've been in friendships where like, I feel like I'm just giving more than I'm receiving. And I thought that was poignant also, because I, you know, as we talk about friendships, how do you identify these energy vampires, as you call them, or in any relationship? I think in a coworker or, you know, a romantic partner, what are your first, like, I guess, triggers, green flags or red flags when you're kind of deciding, is this my person and do I want to spend any time with them type of
thing? Yeah. I got sucked in. I mean, I don't know why, but I was a sucker for narcissists. I think it's because I was raised by narcissists. So it was a pattern that I knew.
Okay. Yep.
And once you, it was really, I didn't even know. For anyone listening right now, if you don't know what a narcissist is, please do yourself a favor and go look it up. I didn't know. I did not know. I just thought, oh, it's someone who's conceited. I literally looked up the definition not too long ago, like maybe a couple of years ago. And I was shocked to find that I was attracting narcissists because that's exactly who I was raised by. And so a narcissist is somebody who isn't empathetic for others. They lack this empathy thing. The world kind of revolves around them, but not in a selfish, conceited kind of way. They're usually very charming, very outgoing, very social. And so you get caught up in all of that, but the world kind of revolves around them. And again, they lack this empathy thing. And they also just need a lot of your attention, a lot of everyone's attention. And so that's what was happening to me as I was getting sucked up into like this one particular friendship I mentioned in the book. It was a long friendship and she basically required so much time and attention. She was texting me constantly, calling me constantly. While I'd meet a bunch of new friends through her, I couldn't really develop relationships with anyone because I didn't have time. I was a single mom,
right,
working full time. And so I really only had time to cater to her. And while you get wrapped up in the fun and the excitement and all of that, which is what happened to me, in the end, she was never there for me. And she sucked the life out of me and I had no time for anyone else. Mm-hmm. Now the circumstance landed where I had to confront her, set some boundaries, and then she couldn't handle it. And of course, because the world was all about her and we ended up parting ways and it did me the biggest favor. I knew that I had lost something that wasn't good for me because I gained tons of new friends. I had energy for all this other stuff. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize the life was being sucked out of me from this person.
Literally, you say you had more energy for other people. Mm-hmm. Because you think about being friends with somebody like that, a male or female, it is, you take on, and I'm a very, I think it's my nature to take on the emotions of others. And so if I hear a story or somebody's very like, there's a lot of turmoil surrounded by something that's going on in someone's life, I think about it after that conversation. Yeah. Gosh, I hope they're okay. Gosh, I hope her daughter's okay. That sounded kind of serious. I wonder if I should, you know what I mean?
Me too.
I know what you mean by that energy. And I think that that is why I just feel so strongly that women should really read this book for so many different lessons. It's not like you get one thing from it. There are so many chapters where I just had to be like, oh, oh gosh. And then, you know, sometimes I think early on in the book, you kind of make a point like, you know, opinions of others, not really any of your business. And it's like,
yeah,
you know, you get to thinking that like, you know, as lovely as I think I am, I'm probably, an energy vampire to someone else. And so I think that.
Oh, like, I highly doubt that, Rachel.
Well, but you know what I mean? But it's like, you have to realize that like, there is kind of that lid for every pot, but it's that not all people are meant to be in friendships or relationships or anything like that.
Yeah.
Make that space as you did. Like you said, you had so many more meaningful friendships and it's just like, I love how, and for anyone listening, I mean, Jenna goes really vulnerable with these stories and, you know, things that are very hard to share about our personal life,
with
identifying things that maybe outwardly aren't huge, like deal breakers, like with some of your, like Dave, I have to mention Dave because I feel like he's like a theme of the book, but it's just like, you know, to an outsider, things that this Dave guy did were so bad.
Right, right.
Women would realize like, yeah, so not so bad isn't the ideal. That's not.
Yeah. So- we don't need to settle. Life is too short, and we're not going to live life. If you, I have my own show called The Jenna Banks Show. It's a video series for anyone who's interested. And I can't wait for the one I'm about to release. Right now, if you're listening to this, where are we at right now? April 20th or so. I imagine it's going to drop next week.
Yep.
I love it so much because it's all about valuing your time and attention. And I interviewed the wonderful Audra Agin, who came to this epiphany after her kids left home. They're 21 and 24, I believe. But she came to understand during COVID, when all of a sudden the world stopped and the world wasn't as busy as it was. She was so busy traveling, working, and doing all this stuff with the kids and all that. When things slowed down, and she didn't know what to do, she was freaking out with her time, you know. And then she came to realize the value of her time and attention. And then she's like, oh my God, I was never valuing my time and attention. And now she says, you know, my time is so valuable. There needs to be ROI on where I spend my time. And, you know, ultimately that in that relationship with Dave, I was spending so much of my energy helping him with his business, helping him with his kids. And what was I getting back? Like, I was being depleted.
Right.
And now I also talk about this, how it's important for you to fill yourself up. We talked about the full cup. I call it the power container.
Yes.
You power up your power container. You are the one responsible for making yourself happy. So when I was feeling depleted by giving, over giving to my boyfriend at the time, I would feel depleted. Then I'd feel resentful, which is very common to happen. I think we've all been there where you're giving,
yep,
and then you're depleted. And then you're like, man, I'm mad at this person, right? And then you're like, I'm going to go back and I'm going to talk to them and they better make me happy. So then we put it on them to make us happy. We want them to fill us up because we've just depleted ourselves. And so, you know, it's really understanding this energy thing that's happening, and understanding like, hey, you just overgave, really, is what you did. And so you need to stop, give to yourself, take some time for you, pour your energy back into yourself, practice some self-care. What I did was I made myself some nice food. I took a bubble bath, listened to music, did the things that filled me up. And all of a sudden I felt so much better. I wasn't thinking about him. I filled myself up. And then he comes home and all he wants to do is wrap his arms around me because I'm emanating such positive energy. And I mentioned this in the book, like I literally got from him what I was looking to get because I chose to give it to myself.
And that's the lesson. It's that like, you can't wait around for someone to make you love yourself. You need to do that. And it just fits together like a puzzle piece, or you figure out, oh, once I'm able to get to a position where I have love for myself, I can see that this person, he's not capable of giving me, and I can't ask him, I can't change him, I can't do anything. And I think that's, I mean, again, that message can transcend all different kinds of relationships. Okay. Now, Jenna, before we wrap this up, I have to get into a little bit, because there were a lot of career minded things where I was just like, well, how did she do that? Like, I had to laugh when you tell a story about how there was maybe a senior vice president who was in a meeting and he asked you to get a cup of coffee. And I, oh God, yes, I've been there. Like,
have you? Oh my goodness. Okay.
Do you take cream or sugar? And like, when you're like, oh no. And I love it. Like later on in the book, she actually gives like lessons on, if you can't say no, try to say, you know, I got it last time. Why don't you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just like, I would love to know, because I know that there are a lot of women still, and especially, I would say maybe like my age, 35 or older, who are still really struggling with that letting go of over serving men in the workplace. And I say overserving men because it's just, it's something that I feel like this next younger generation, it's like,
get your way. Yeah, get your own coffee.
And I'm like, how did you do that? How did you, like, I need to grow, you know? And I just, that, I don't know. I think it's, where did you tell us how you related self-love to setting those particular like stereotypical boundaries in your workplace so that you could really dominate, I guess?
You know, it, and I wouldn't call it dominating per se. I would just call it getting respect from others.
Yeah.
Because I respected myself. That ultimately is the lesson in those stories, is that because I put my needs first, I'm my highest priority. They're not my priority. Mm-hmm. I mean, is this going to help me in my career? Is this in my job description? My priority at work is me. So, you know, if it's in my job description to be the office admin, I'll certainly do that. But right. That wasn't my job description. And so if they needed coffee, that had nothing to do with me. If I don't need coffee. Now, if I'm getting coffee and I say, hey, I'm going to go get some coffee. Does anyone else want some? That's nice. Yes. I would definitely do that. But for somebody else to want coffee and like want me to go get it for them, like, why? No, and you know, by me putting my foot down like that, it was, hey, wow, Jenna's to be respected. Trust me, that never would happen again. You know, once they test you, then they go, oh, okay, she's not the coffee runner. Yeah, no, I'm not that person. But the problem is I call these social norms. A lot of this is all unconscious behaviors, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, you know, that person, a lot of times, like these guys will be like, oh, she looks like she should go get coffee. It's not a conscious thing. Maybe just, oh, they're just used to the women catering or whatever.
Like, hey, sweetheart, would you mind? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. But it takes this someone bringing up, shedding a light on these things. And that's what I aim to do in the book, is once you're aware, you can't unhear it, right? You're
going, no.
Right. So I even, when I relayed this story to other friends of mine, I have this one friend in particular, she went really far in corporate, but before she did, she was doing the office housework. She was sitting around waiting for promotions, hoping someone would recognize her, doing late nights, working late nights and on weekends, and not getting promoted, not getting raises, all of this. Now, all it took was for her to go into HR and be like, hey, you know what? I've been watching my bosses get promoted, getting raises. This is ridiculous. And she was full on ready to quit. She was ready to own her value to the point where she would walk out that door. And you know what happened? Everything changed. Mm-hmm. One moment changed her life completely. She is now sitting in this high, she has this beautiful high-rise condo in the city, driving a Range Rover, like literally making more money than most men I know. And she's also at the, like, one of the highest levels you can get in executive management, because she chose to respect herself and value herself and feel worthy. And she was tired of doing all the legwork to watch everyone else get promoted. So these are the things, like, once you go, oh, shoot, you know, I might be doing this or not doing that. Or, you know, we all learn, I think, best stories and examples, which is why in the book I chose to be as vulnerable as I was.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because I remember the story you're talking about from there. And it's like, you know, you think about people in your own, you know, tenure in office settings. And I remember several women over the years, I was like, geez, Louise, like, she's a little aggressive. And then I'm like, and look where she is now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's another thing, the stigma. It's not just a men on women. It's a women on women too. It's almost like misery loves company. Like, as long as none of us are getting promoted, we can all just like kind of bitch and moan about like our situation. And then you're like, oh, but who's laughing to the bank? This one who's like busting her butt to be like, listen,
that's right.
I'm not getting your coffee and I'm not doing this. You can see how much I've done. You know what I mean? And
you know what happened after I did that with the not getting coffee? I got this huge account, like the largest company account, like that next week. Why? Because I was like, oh, Jenna's, for some reason, and the perception in the mind changes when you stop being the office errand runner. They don't see you as a doormat. They're like, oh, she can handle it. Like, she's got confidence and whatever. And so it's not about being, and I also want to like, you know, put this out there that, you know, you might've seen some aggressive women in your workplace. I don't think anyone ever saw me as aggressive. Mm-hmm. There's the difference between the masculine way of approaching things and the feminine. And I'm all about the feminine. You can be confident, but kind.
Yeah.
You can be assured.
Graceful. Yeah.
Graceful. You can be self-assured and have self-respect and value yourself. And that won't come off as aggressive at all. It's just like, damn, this girl knows her worth.
It's really cool to watch though, right? You're almost like in awe. Like, you're just like, Wow. Okay. That just happened. But to your point, like one's perception of you can change like that. Like you, people make judgments so quickly. And when they see something like that, something triggers in their brain and suddenly, you know, it's like a movie. Okay. Put her up in the front office. She passed the test.
Exactly.
It wasn't really even a test, but it was like,
but it was. Wow.
Well, and it's really funny because you do like I've said, you have done your research. There's so many, there are what, four probably pages of references in the back of your book. Yeah. And you're so good about reaching to other authorities and books and everything. But I love the statistics that you share. I thought some of them were rather horrifying. Mm. One of them, there's two that I really wanted to focus on, but it was when the difference between when men apply for a job and when women apply for a job, this almost made me throw up. I was just like, oh. So the statistic is that 60% or a man will apply for a job if he meets what, 60% of the
60%, sometimes 50% of the criteria. Yeah.
Yeah. Women won't even apply unless they meet 100%.
And this is pretty much most women out there.
I mean, me, if I saw something like, oh, I actually don't have that. I don't have mm-hmm. that. So I better not. And I just, and then the other one, which, oh man, I think you're going to let a lot of women off the hook here, Jenna, this perfectionism. There's like an entire section about being a perfectionist, and I'm a recovering perfectionist. I realized a few years ago that it's just not worth it. I'm just, it's not
good for you. I'm glad you came to that realization. Like I
mean, it was definitely towards the end of my corporate career, but I was like, I can't do this anymore. And Jenna, what do you say is good enough?
80%. Yeah. I had to learn that lesson. 80% is good enough. And you know what, when you give yourself that break and you realize, oh yeah, it is good enough. And then it also allows you to be a better leader, better manager, better mother, better everything, because you're more lenient on others too. Yeah. You know, guys are getting to the top based on, we know, we've seen this all ourselves. They're sometimes at 60, 70%.
Cutting look, corners we, up. Yep. Yep.
You,
yep.
You know, and they're like, how are they getting away with that? Well, I'm going to be better. I'm going to be, and we create value and identity out of this perfectionism. But unfortunately, you know what perfectionism is? It's a fear of not being acceptable unless we're perfect. We're limiting ourselves and we're sucking up our own time and energy and wrapping our value up in this perfectionism when all it's doing is holding us back. It's holding us back from being productive. It's also making us be way too hard on ourselves. And so it's just a self-forgiving, self-compassionate way of being when you just let it go at 80% is good enough and move on. It really was a game changer for me. It allowed me to sell my last business for $500,000 because I let go of the micromanaging and allowed others more autonomy and freedom and accepted their 80%. And yeah.
Yes. I was literally about to say that. Oh. Sorry. I was about to say that, how if you accept 80% for yourself, imagine how empowered people who are under you will feel when it's like, hey, we need to get this out. I need you to get it done to the best of your ability. But here's the thing, it needs to get done, because I know so many people are like, well, I haven't had a chance to like go over it again or whatever. And it's like even my husband's dealing with this. He was like, I got to delegate all these things. I just don't know if I can. I don't know if they're up to thing. I was like, let me just tell you a little 80% rule that I just learned. And
he was, you know, like, where I learned it from? Barbara Corcoran on Shark Tank. It was.
Yes.
It really got me, because she wanted to invest in a company. This woman, it was a single woman who owned and ran the company. And she said, I love you and I love your product, but you have a problem. And that is, everything has to be perfect. And that means you're not going to be able to let go and you're not going to be able to scale. And she's like, I had to learn that lesson myself and learn the 80% is good enough, which allowed me to scale. And so she's like, so unfortunately for that reason, I'm out. And of course I'm a huge Shark Tank fan. And I was like, that really hit home for me, because I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Whoa, I never really thought of it like that. So I wanted to pass the message along, because it is a self-loving gesture to also give yourself that compassion and that kindness to say, you girl, you're good enough as you are. You don't have to be perfect. You do a good job. Exactly. You're acceptable as you are. Yeah.
Yes. Well, and to wrap it up, I just wanted to go a little bit about what you kind of say towards the end about owning your entire story. And I think that in an age of influencers and, you know, the perfect family and what that means and hiding, you know, what ugly parts of yourself that, you know, may be about there. And again, how vulnerable you were. Like, talk a little bit about like this. You aren't just a, you know, selling these businesses for $500,000 because you, you know, had a nest egg or you had wealthy parents. Like, right. Here's the thing. I gave a little bit in your bio, but like, your background is like, you can do this. Anyone can do this. Can you tell just a little bit about like that full scope of you and what you came from and what the potential is?
Yeah. I mean, I had to own my story writing the book. And you know that but before I even started writing the book, that own your story, that was really standing out to me because I was noticing in others, those who didn't own their story and how I'd know their story, but they wouldn't be public with it. And I noticed what a negative effect it would have on their life. Like they felt like they were less than, it gave them insecurity. You could see it almost in the body language of like, kind of feeling inferior because of this story they were hiding from. And I'm like, oh, if you would only own this, it's not that big a deal. It's not that we're going to accept you and love you no matter what. It would just save you from putting so much of your power into this story that you think is ugly. And then I realized, oh my God, you know, usually what we see in other people in other situations, it's usually a reflection of something that we need to see ourselves. And then I realized, applies to me too. And you know, I had to own my story, and that includes only having a GED for an education. You know, I barely went to high school. I had such a rough family life, which, you know, I talk about in my book a little bit, but, you know, I left home at age 14 and then 16, had to leave my mother's home. There was mental and physical abuse, happening. And I really didn't feel a sense of love from any of them, and certainly had no love for myself to the point where I wanted to die and literally had a death wish. So I had to go from literally a place of self-loathing to loving myself more than anyone else. But to share this story, I had to share the whole story, including all those tough times that I had to go through to get to where I am today, because how could you really understand the value of this self-love thing if you don't understand what I had to come from to get to where I am today? So I had to own that story. And by going through that process, it was hard at first. It was hard to be vulnerable, but nothing has been more liberating. Now it's just like, okay, I'm just me. I am authentically me. There's nothing to worry about. And I only wish that for everybody, if we could only all get to this place where we could take those ugly stories, whether you served a prison sentence, whether you lost custody of one of your kids, I'm talking some hard, tough stories. That wasn't me, but I know people who have had those stories, who have owned those stories, and they're in the same position as I am. And I'm like, wow, can we all just get there, please? It would be a much better place.
And that's such a beautiful place to wrap up, because Jenna, when you and I first met, I was just like, wow, there is this incredible light. There is this, you know, this vibe that I was like, yes, I don't know what you're selling, but let's record a podcast. Like, I've been in hiatus for how many months? I was like, I know. Oh my gosh, I feel like people need to hear this. They need to, you know, experience this. And just before we started recording for the podcast, we talked about how I think a lot of society still kind of leans to the authorities of, you know, therapists with a PhD and telling them how they need to deal with their trauma, you know, little T, big T trauma. But it isn't until you hear somebody like, no, I went through it. I went from literal rock bottom, almost, you know, a failed almost suicide dead. Away from like, that's it. You don't get any lower. It's not like I had a rich family's money to get me into rehab or anything like that. This is it. This is me. I could have been homeless. I could have been whatever, but this is me. And here I am to share the story of like, it is all these lessons of practicing self-love and boundaries and just being, you know, putting yourself as a priority that make such profound changes in your life. Look at you now. You've sold your company, you're a best-selling author, and all because you decided to put your story out there so that other people could learn from it. It doesn't have to be that I had your same experiences to learn a lesson from, wow. Like if she can get that much value from going to almost, you, like you said, self-loathing to such self-adoration, yeah, sign me up. I can, mm-hmm. I can love myself a little more. Like, I'm pretty sure that I am very capable of doing this. So thank you so much, Jenna, for sharing with me your lovely book. The book is online everywhere. Amazon, I Love Me More by Jenna Banks with this cute little thumbprint heart. Jenna, thank you so much. Can you very briefly, can you tell everyone where they can find you, where they can learn more about, you know, aside from your book, other things that you offer, speaking things and such?
Yeah. Thank you so much for offering. And thank you so much for breaking your hiatus to have me here today.
This is fun.
This is so much fun. I love these conversations, and really just thank you for helping to get the message out there, because that's really the reason why I wrote the book, is just to help as many women as I can with this really important message. I would like to encourage everyone to just visit me at my website. I think that's the easiest landing page, mm-hmm. is jenna-banks.com, because there I have links to my Instagram, Facebook, where else am I? TikTok, Twitter, and all of that, even LinkedIn. In fact, I really love posting on LinkedIn too, because I also, like you mentioned, I'm a speaker.
Yep.
And I'm getting this message out into corporate now. I just did an engagement in Miami at a cybersecurity conference for the women's program. I mean,
so important.
Everyone's realizing how important this is. And, you know, the business world also wants to help empower women. And right now, you know, there's so many opportunities waiting for us to step into these greater roles. But I think the next challenge, the next step for us as women, is to overcome some of these things, these internal old social programs, old social norms that we learned when we were kids by the age of 7, right?
Yep.
That are working against us. Mm-hmm. If we can get beyond those, we can get to the next level and really get to a place of true equality. So, so just jenna-banks.com, but I'm super active on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that. So I'd love to connect with you guys.
And I will link all of this below in the show notes. So anyone listening, they can just kind of scroll down and click right into Jenna's information. Jenna, thank you so much again. And I hope you just have the most amazing career. I cannot wait to watch you continue to rise. So thank you.
Thank you. And you as well, Rachel. Thank you so much.
Well, you just heard from author Jenna Banks, and you can find her book, I Love Me More, at bookstores across the U.S., as well as online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target.com, and more. I really cannot recommend this book enough. It is for your friends, your sisters, coworkers, even your nieces and daughters, as they learn these very valuable lessons. And by now, I hope you're super motivated to show yourself some love and prioritize your best self. Be sure to check out all of my Mind Hustle products. In addition to my Mind Hustle journal and daily guidance card deck, I also created candles, room sprays, and even anxiety elixirs using aromatherapy to enhance mood, increase cognitive function, and encourage emotional well-being. Each scent is uniquely designed to help you process different emotions, keeping you motivated and inspired to create your best self. Click the link in the show notes to shop all of the Mind Hustle products now. Until next time, I'm Rachel Thomas with the Hustle vs. Flow podcast.